Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the incomparable T. Andrew Finn. When I was a young man, I thought I was a pretty generous person. But I was actually stingy. Oh, I gave money to charity. And I helped friends with major projects. I even helped strangers. And I tipped well. But I didn't understand the fundamental nature of generosity. I do now. And what I want to do is share some of that insight with you. Generosity is a virtue with two attributes: giving and giving of yourself. Halil Gibran once wrote, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It's when you give of yourself that you truly give." But what does it mean to give of yourself? It isn't about giving things to people or even simply doing things for people. It's about sharing our common humanity. It's making a connection with another person that says, "Hey, I realize we are in this together and we are alike." For that reason, I prefer the phrase "sharing yourself" as opposed to Gibran's "give of yourself." I will say that generosity can be summarized as having a generosity of spirit in our attitude towards others. Let me give you some specific examples. The first is in the general area of giving and accepting help. Most of us are pretty good at giving help. We see that with Hurricane Katrina now. We see it with a variety of kinds of things, from volunteering to giving money to charity. What I want to focus on is accepting help. You know, during the coverage of Hurricane Katrina, I was listening to a woman on the news who lost their house. House was flattened in Mississippi. And what she said was, she was distraught because she said, "My family has never accepted anything from anybody. We take care of ourselves." And she was crying because she felt like she couldn't do that anymore. I want to suggest to you that that lady's been going through life being stingy, and she doesn't even realize it. Because self-sufficiency is a great thing and it's a virtue. But when you take it to an extreme and say, "I don't need anyone else and no one else can contribute to my life," you're actually being stingy, because you're surrounded by people out there who would love to make a contribution to your life. Friends and people close to you, family, love to make contributions, and even strangers like to help. And when you say, "I don't need any help," you're putting up a wall that keeps people out. It's actually a form of generosity to let people make a contribution to you. So the next time somebody calls and says, "Hey, what can I bring to your party?" Don't tell them, "Nothing, I've got everything handled." If they really want to bring something, think of something. In fact, have a small list of things that you could use. You could get them yourself, but you could say, "Well, you could do this." Or at least tell them, "I'll keep you in mind, and if I have any last-minute needs, I'll ask you to stop at the store for me." People want to help. Let them in. That's generosity. The second area I want to talk about is in the area of giving and accepting compliments. I think as we get older, we're less self-conscious and we're better about giving compliments. We worry less that it's going to seem phony or whatever when we say to somebody that we like their attitude or we like what they're wearing or whatever. But most of us are terrible at accepting compliments, even as we get older. You know, I used to think that deflecting compliments was a form of humility. If somebody said to me, "Hey, thanks a lot for helping me move," I would say, "Oh, that wasn't a problem," or "No biggie." I'd minimize my contribution. I no longer do that. When somebody wants to acknowledge me or thank me, I just bask in the glow of it now. It's a hard lesson to learn, but they want to make a contribution to your life by thanking you. Let them. Don't deflect it. Don't minimize it. Don't write it off. And so we can all get better at accepting compliments, but we can also do a little better at acknowledging other people. You know, we tend to thank people when they do something specific, but we don't stop often enough and just thank them for being who they are. So whether it's your parents or your children, you could turn around tomorrow to them and say to your son or daughter, you know, I don't say this often enough, but I'm really proud about the kind of person you have developed into. Because parents are proud, and there may be some rough spots with your kid, but you love them, and you are proud of them. But they don't hear that often enough. You'll be surprised the results that that can have. Not that you're after results, but because that touches a person, and it's a connection with your common humanity with them, it will have an impact on them. You can even do the same with strangers. I remember being in the grocery store a couple of years ago, and I was driving my cart past this woman who had just dealt with her son. I witnessed the whole exchange in the aisle. He wanted a bag of candy. She said no. He was on the verge of a tantrum. She managed it very well, handled it with love but firmness, and he behaved. And as I went past, he had a sour look on his face, and I just said to him, "Hey, do you know you have a great mother?" He looked at me and he didn't say much. He didn't say anything. I said, "You do. You have a great mother and you're lucky." And I moved on, and, you know, the kid thought whatever he thought and the mother thought whatever she thought. I got to the next aisle and she came around the other direction and she stopped me and she said, "I just want to thank you for what you said back there." She said, "That made my day." And, you know, I could have just passed her by and not said anything, but by speaking up and complimenting her, acknowledging her for just something I witnessed, it made a contribution to her life. I sometimes do the same with grocery checkout clerks. You know, if you notice, they're awful fast. Not all of them. Some of them are slow, but a lot of them are quite fast. And I'm always amazed at how good they are at their job. Well, don't just sit there and be amazed. When I'm amazed, I will turn to them as I'm paying the bill and say, "Hey, by the way, I just want to say hi. You're pretty fast." They love hearing that. So that's a form of generosity. The third area is in general conversation. When you're talking, you can share yourself when you talk. What I mean by that is instead of talking about general things and reporting on what went on in your life today, you can share something about yourself. I had a friend that lost his job a couple of years ago. He was fired. And I could have said to him, "Oh, you're real competent. You'll be fine." He was real competent. And ultimately, he was fine. And I could have said, "Oh, you'll find another job quickly." And ultimately, he did find another job quickly. Instead, what I chose to do was to talk to him about the fact that I'd been fired from a job a number of years before that, and share that experience with him. And he came back to me later and he said, "You know, of all the people that spoke to me about my situation, everyone tried to reassure me. You did some of that, but you told me that you'd been through the same thing, and you shared that vulnerability with me. And that meant a lot to me." So when I say share yourself when you talk, I mean, share a vulnerability. Talk to someone in a way that they get the common humanity that they share with you. And that's a form of generosity. It also works if you provide genuine listening on the other side of the conversation. I once had someone say to me that most people don't genuinely listen. And I said, well, what is, you know, genuine listening? What's real listening? You know, I listen. And they said, well, let me ask you, what happens when you get in a conversation with one of your parents? I said, well, my dad repeats a lot of the same stories. I've heard them all 100 times, so, you know, I know what he's going to say. He said, ah, that's, you're not listening then. If you already think you know what the person's going to say, you're not really listening. He said, here's the secret to listening. Listen to someone you know well as though they're a total stranger and you've never heard them speak before and you don't know what they're going to say next. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder if I can do that. So the next time I had a conversation with my dad, I tried it out. Now, he has this great story he was telling. It was Halloween, and he and a bunch of his friends, when they were young, took a farmer's carriage, disassembled it, and reassembled it on top of the farmer's barn. It's a flat roof barn. Farmer gets up the next day, there's the carriage. Well, I've heard this story a couple hundred times, probably. But this time I started asking him questions. I said, now, Dad, who all was there? Was Uncle Al there? You know, was Jerry Barrett there? No, Jerry wasn't there. But and suddenly new information's coming out, and I'm eliciting information that he's never shared with me before, and he's remembering things that he doesn't normally remember when he tells the story because I'm pressing him for details. And now we're in a conversation, and I actually found myself A, learning something new, and B, being engaged in the conversation. And I know it was more fun for him than normal when he's talking and I'm just sitting there acting bored. So listening to someone, genuinely listening to someone, that's generosity. And then the last area is in making and accepting requests. Now, many of us, when somebody else makes a request, we accept the request or we decline it. So somebody comes around and collects for American Cancer Society, and you either care about that cause and you give them a check or a few bucks, or you don't. So I'm not going to spend too much time on whether or not you make donations or accept requests. I'd like to spend more time on this notion of making requests of people. You know, a lot of people don't take on being the block leader for the American Cancer Society or some other charity because they say to themselves, oh, my neighbors don't want to hear from me. My neighbors don't want me bugging them for money. Or when someone does make a request, you know that their heart's not in it when they say to you things like, well, you probably don't want to contribute, but, or they say, well, I hate to bother you, but. No, wrong psychology. The way to approach a request is to say to people, have I got an opportunity for you? If you look at the way good salespeople are, that's how they approach it. Now, you can say, well, that's just sales technique, but this is the secret of making requests. People want to contribute in life. People want to help those that are hurt by Hurricane Katrina. Or people want to help others that have other kinds of problems. They're just waiting to be asked in a lot of cases. So when you make a request of someone, whether it's to contribute to a charity or it's to bring a dish to a picnic, you're giving them an opportunity to step up and make a contribution. And making contributions is part of what turns people on. So you're being generous when you make a request of someone else. Because if it's a true request, a no is as good as a yes. And you have to remember that. So, you know, we all have parents, we all have children that make demands and disguise them as requests. So they say, would you do X for me? And when you say no, when you decline, it turns out it wasn't a request because a no is not okay. They get upset and they find some way to punish you for it because their intention was that this was a demand and they expected you to meet it. But if you make a request to someone and a no is as good as a yes, then you should be free to make requests to people because then if they say no, it doesn't mean anything and it doesn't harm your relationship with them. And meanwhile, you're giving them an opportunity to take action, to make a contribution, to feel good about themselves. So when you make requests of people, that's generosity. And now I have a request of each of you listening. I'd like you to consider starting tomorrow taking on doing an anonymous good deed. Every day, one deed a day for a week. And see what difference it makes for you. So an anonymous good deed can be anything. You just can't tell the giver, the getter of the deed, that it was you. So for me, I try and do one every day. And as often as not, it's picking up a piece of trash on the neighbor's lawn, in the park where I go to shoot hoops, or on the walks that I take through the parks. Sometimes it's taking the newspaper from my neighbor's sidewalk and tossing it up on their front step, the morning newspaper, so they don't have to come all the way out and get it. It can be any number of things. The trick is that you don't announce it to the person that you did it for. Now, you can still talk to somebody else about it. In fact, that's part of the fun of it, is letting someone know what you did. You don't have to keep it inside and keep it secret, although you'll feel good just on your own. Find a buddy to share this with. Find somebody else to take it on with. And it's okay to say, hey, I did this or that. I do that with people. You just don't tell the person that you did it for. The only reason I say anonymous is that, you know, we do good deeds for our family all the time. So for a mother to say, well, I'm going to fix my children's breakfast, that's my good deed. No, that's something you're doing anyway. I'm saying take on something you don't normally do. So that is a form of generosity. So I want to leave you with a quote that's one of my favorite inspirational quotes. It's from the incomparable George Bernard Shaw. Shaw said, "This is the true joy in life. Being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. Being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it's my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It's a sort of splendid torch which I've got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. So my request is that you go out tomorrow and make your torch burn just a little bit brighter. And as JFK famously said, the glow from that fire can truly light the world."